This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring retired FBI special agent Jennifer Coffendaffer.
Rex Heerman being accused of being the Long Island serial killer, the Gilgo Beach murderer. Now four bodies being connected with him, many more out there that are questionable, may at some point also be connected and possible charges being brought against him. The other person in this question is Asa Elrup, who's not been charged with any crimes. She is the wife of Rex Heerman, still is. No emergency divorce proceeding ever taking place there. She's still standing by and wants to see the evidence, according to her attorney. I'm paraphrasing there, once this actually does get to court. But there's a lot of questions about that, considering she was with him for many, many years. Many of those years where these alleged murders took place. Her alibi thus far has been, I was out of town every time these things happened. Now, an attorney for some of the victims, John Ray, who we've heard from in the past and who has actually brought some very fruitful information to the argument and to the case well before investigators have, pointing out, there may be some inconsistencies on this vacation story that Asa Elrup has been telling and has backed up with some evidence as well. Joining me to discuss, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. Is John Ray someone who just really wants to stick it to Asa Elrup? Because it doesn't seem to end this litany of, I think there's more here. And I can't say I blame him. I think there should be more questions asked of Asa. But what do you think with these latest allegations that maybe some of these dates don't actually match up to where you said you were at any given time where these crimes allegedly took place?
Well, so to your first question, I think because he was involved with information from these other individuals who said that they had intersection with Rex Heerman. Some said they were at the house. They said they were going to be involved with, you know, menage a trois with Asa Elrup and Rex Heerman. And so I understand his concern, and I understand why he wants to show backing for that, right? Mm-hmm. He wants to show information that backs information he's just received from other witnesses. Mm-hmm. And by showing that these dates don't align that were given by the prosecution in terms of the bank statements and the hotel registries and so forth, that they don't align. But one of the things he's hanging his hat on is the verbiage. And the verbiage is on or about. Mm-hmm. Now, I can tell you, you can look at any affidavit, virtually any affidavit. And that's what we always say, is on or about. Why do we say that? Because if you know, the minute we say it happened at 12:01 p.m. on the 1st, it ends up happening at 12:02 p.m. on the 1st. Mm-hmm. And so we are taught in law enforcement to use the on or about verbiage in case, you know, they checked out at midnight 01 or checked in at midnight before, right? So he's making a lot of that verbiage, and I think that we just need to, that's ridiculous. But to his other argument, that, for instance, the dates that it shows up on your statement, you know, the posted versus the transaction mm-hmm. dates and things like that. I mean, law enforcement has looked at that and they've said she was out of town. They yeah. said the kids were out of town and that Rex joined. So I understand his motivation. I just want to see in black and white, other than on or about, yeah. that he can prove that.
And I think everybody wants to see that. I don't know that these new arguments are really all that strong when we're going back 20 years almost on a bank statement stating, you know, when someone checked into a timeshare or did not, because there can be discrepancies in those dates. I think we all looked at a credit card statement going, where did this charge come from? And it was like a trip you went on 2 weeks ago or something. It finally cleared or finally went through. And we're talking, again, almost 20 years ago with probably even a less precise system than we have now. So to be hanging a hat on that or to be looking at this as, you know, I don't know, something questionable in terms of where she said she was, because she does have a lot of evidence to back up that she was not at the place at that time. But just because you're out of town when your husband allegedly is murdering sex workers, that doesn't necessarily mean you don't have knowledge that your husband is doing something wrong. And it may simply be that he's seeing sex workers. That's not a crime if you're aware of that, that your husband is doing that. But if you're aware that there's something beyond that going on, then I think we get into to trickier territory. But why have we not seen anything further into these other allegations that John Ray has brought up about the alleged sex parties, about the menage a trois and the people coming over and whether Asa was involved or not? We've had some statements that have been made, but we haven't really seen it go much further than that as of right now.
Well, I think there's two reasons. One is I believe only two people are willing to actually come forward and speak. The others will do it under the cloak of anonymity, but they don't want to make official allegations. So that's a big problem for law enforcement. You know, people deserve to face their accused. And when they're hiding and don't really want to put anything on paper, that's a difficulty. Mm-hmm. But back to the ones that are willing, recall that we had the head of this task force, the person who really put it all together. He was, you know, resigned very quickly amidst, you know, there's some issues, financial or fiscal type issues, right? So he resigned. And whenever you have a task force like this and your boss, basically, who's calling the shots on who's, you know, who's handling this, who's handling this, who's interviewing this, it's difficult, I can tell you. So I think that's part of the delay. Also, I think this task force tried to focus in on Maureen Raina Barnes because she was the fourth Gilgo victim that they didn't quite have enough to charge initially. So it was very important to them, I believe, to kind of, you know, put that part of the case, have it solid and done. So I think for these reasons, maybe we're seeing a bit of a lag time between these new allegations and having any cement one way or the other.
Yeah. Is there a reason why Asa Elrup has not tried to come forward with, I guess, more to exonerate herself out of this? You know, obviously she's provided the bank statements and such, but she kind of sits in a very weird position of there's very bizarre actions, lack of empathy and such, and the public very much being judgmental towards her. Obviously, she has now a documentary that's being filmed around her with 50 Cent and G-Unit, so I'm wondering if there's some non-disclosures there as far as who she can talk to or who she can't talk to. But I would think if you really truly had nothing to do with anything, you'd be waving your hands, and at least through your attorney, saying, look, everybody, here's why I didn't have anything to do with this. Or is it best just to be quiet right now and not say anything that could possibly incriminate you unintentionally?
Well, she has likely painted herself as one of the most unsympathetic mass murder, serial killer relatives that we've seen, right? Just wanting the guns back, you know, I guess because they're worth money. Just lack of empathy. Really, I haven't heard anything regarding the deceased, you know, her having any sort of, you know, I'm sorry for the victims, no matter whether she thinks her husband's guilty or not. And then, you know, the flip flop after the documentary, she's just so unattractive in terms of wanting to have any sympathy for her or wanting to think she's not involved. Then the new allegations come out and it kind of adds up for a lot of people. Well, no wonder she's doing X, Y, Z. It's because she was probably involved. I also think it is very difficult to believe for a lot of people that a wife that was married to a husband for that long of time, they never moved. They were always at that house. And it's possible that some of these crimes could have occurred at that house, that she just didn't notice anything.
Yeah.
Anything unusual? And then of course the hairs, even though I think that really is traced and transfer hair, it just looks so bad. on her.
And how frequently does that happen? I mean, we cover a lot of cases here where there's horrible things that happens. Bodies are found. I don't know. I mean, in my mind, it's not that common that we're hearing about spouses' hairs and DNA being found on the victims if they weren't actually part of the crime itself. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just because, you know, we focus on a lot of very high profile cases, and there's plenty of cases out there that don't get the attention that they deserve or that other ones do. In your experience with the FBI and in being an investigator and an agent, is that common that these sort of things end up on the victims' bodies?
I wouldn't say common, but I would say, yes, it can happen, certainly. And I think part of the reason we're seeing that in this case is because of that house.
Yeah.
They lived there forever. He lived there growing up. And just the hoarding nature of what that house looked like.
Yeah.
The disheveled, you know, I don't know how often they even vacuumed. You know,
if they
I'm not trying to be mean.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if you look at how that house seemed to be kept from all the photos we've seen, for this reason, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I think that there's some understanding to be made there with the hoarding of that house and what was found. But yeah, it still kind of baffles the mind that there hasn't been a little more attention, it seems, focused over on Asa. Or again, you know, a lot goes on behind the scenes that we are unaware of. Maybe the due diligence has been done and we just don't know about it, but time will tell.
Well, I think it was an interesting point that he brought up, the attorney brought up, that he says he's talked to a clerk that says there's discrepancies. And then also the fact that they didn't only stay at hotels. There were timeshares involved, you know, where, you know, individual, like an Airbnb back of the day. I find all of that very interesting because, of course, back then there's not Ring cameras. So I think it's going to take really what I call gumshoe detective work, you know, getting out and pounding the pavement. Hopefully they've done that. To show that everyone they could interview has been interviewed and that they have backed up the bank statements and corroborated all this information they have. They just didn't release that to everyone.
Well,
I would believe they did.
I would say John Ray kind of fits that description of a gumshoe detective. I was saying to someone earlier, he reminds me of Inspector Gadget with his hat. So I guess he's a good person to have on the outside that seems to be picking up a lot of the investigative work where maybe some of the investigators have missed some of these things along the way.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I'll give him that. He's uncovering a lot of different people that are coming forward and with relevant information, seemingly. So thankfully, he's on it because that keeps law enforcement honest and on it. But I truly believe that change of the guard when he resigned had a major impact of just the day-to-day operations, at least for a while, until they got somebody else to be in charge and up to speed and making decisions.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.